Hello there and happy holidays. Call me the ghost of Christmas past here with an alternative political history. That's right. For the four episodes this holiday season, we're going to play a little choose your own adventure and pretend that one thing that happened in our nation's history did not actually happen. It's a whole new Game of Thrones, if you will, and we're going to explore every scenario we can. After the episodes, I'd love you to send your feedback, reviews, comments, Twitter, Facebook, whatever, insult, you know, we love it. And tell me if you think we missed any of the possibilities or other alternative histories you'd like to see. We'd love to hear from you. So this week, here's how we're beginning. We're beginning with Bill Clinton. He was embroiled in a scandal that included him lying under oath and having an affair with an intern barely of age. What if he had resigned in 1998? How different would our future have been? What would a Gore presidency then have been? By the way, would we have gone to Iraq? You see where I'm going here. I'm excited to have journalist and author Jeff Greenfield with me today to go down this rabbit hole, because Jeff loves these rabbit holes. He's lived in rabbit holes, and he's written books on alternative history, including If Kennedy Lived, and Then Everything Changed. So no better way to start this special edition of the Toddcast with Mr. Greenfield. Jeff, thank you for humoring me on this.
Nice to be here, Chuck. Happy holidays.
And, you know, some people may say, why do you do this? And I think I'll let you answer that question. There is something to be gained by doing these things, why people that sort of have this care about history and want to understand the present. But explain why you think exploring an alternative history is helpful in understanding it.
Two things. First, it teaches you how contingent history is. Life does not turn on a dime. It turns on a plugged nickel. Over and over again, the tiniest changes in what did happen would have had enormous consequences. In the Kennedy example, if the rain had not stopped in Dallas, the bubble top would have stayed on top of the car.
Right.
It's one example.
It's just a small thing, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, you know.
Butterfly flaps its wings.
If, on a less grim note, if Gerald Ford had thought about prematurely liberating Poland in that second debate in 1976, mm-hmm. That's not what I mean. I mean spiritual domination. He might well have won that. So that's the first thing. The second thing it teaches me, or has taught me, is how critical the character and temperament of a leader is. There's a big debate about great man or great person theory. It's very clear to me when you study alternative history that put a different person in the same set of realities. For instance, if Kennedy had been killed before he ever got to be president, which almost happened, and Lyndon Johnson had been supervising the Cuban Missile Crisis, mm-hmm. My contention is you would have had a very different outcome.
That's so interesting. Well, I'll tell you, you know, what first got me obsessed with this is actually the 2000 election. And it had nothing to do with the 2000 election. It had everything to do with my obsession with that election, which is the 1998 campaign for Florida's Secretary of State. There was a scandal-plagued incumbent Republican. Right. The Democrats had a great candidate. They were going to win that race. And at the last second, Republicans found this daughter of a longtime donor to primary challenge Sandra Mortham, yada, 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 right? What happens if because as you know where I'm going here, if you have a Democratic Secretary of State, you don't certify the election. And if Florida doesn't get certified, you know.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know that my obsession with 2000 is if Ilhan Gonzalez's mother hadn't drowned. She takes him back to Cuba or state, but there's no controversy over Ilhan going back to Cuba. There's no massive outrage in the Cuban American exile community.
Are you saying maybe there's 600 extra votes somewhere to be found in South Florida?
Well, one respected observer of that thinks that it cost Gore between 15 and 20,000 votes. And if 537 votes determine the presidency, that simple act, you know, either she lives or the young boy doesn't, different scenario.
Well, let's begin where I want to begin, because the 2000 election could have been awfully different. And I know some people say, well, Bill Clinton never would have resigned. Well, you're right, because he didn't. But watching Andrew Cuomo, this year made me think, you know what? No matter what you think, things could have changed and could have gone a different way. So let's start with Bill Clinton resigns. He faces the pressure. He resigns. Al Gore becomes president. The next most important thing that has to happen is he has to pick a vice president.
Right.
So we go down that road. Does it still, Does it end up still being Joe Lieberman? I can make a case that it is. Where do you begin?
Well, clearly, in the real universe, Gore picked Lieberman to show a kind of independence from Clinton, because Joe Lieberman was the most critical Democrat about Bill Clinton's behavior. My feeling is, if Gore is in fact president, let's say he decides that Florida is a reasonably significant state.
Mm-hmm.
There's a senator and former governor named Bob Graham.
He probably does. He does well in a Senate vote, as well in a people vote, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So maybe he says, I think I can nail Florida down with Graham. Now, of course, part of this is you have to, if you're doing this the way I'd like to do it, which is really a deep dive, as you like to say, into reality. What kind of things happen between the time Al Gore becomes president and the election that determines who his vice president might be? If he needs a more moderate Southern experienced guy, it's Graham. If he needs to go to the base, if he needs to do something dramatic.
Let me introduce path three here, which is actually the path that I've been thinking about he might have ended up taking, which is, let's just say Bill Clinton resigned sometime in 98 is when he probably does it. I have, by the way, I remember getting Gore 98 buttons at the CPAC convention that year that they passed. Okay. And so I think I have them somewhere in this office. Don't you think there's pressure for him to pick a woman?
Yeah, I was just about that.
And Dianne Feinstein, circa 1998, is probably the person that's most easily rallied around, right?
You anticipated the next half of my sentence. He might be under great pressure to pick a woman.
Yeah.
Certainly, Dianne Feinstein, 98, is credible. I mean, her current condition is obviously very different. This is 23 years later. Again, it depends how much you calculate. California's in the bag for any Democrat, so he doesn't.
Not in the bag, by the way, not fully in the bag back then, right?
By 1990, I would argue it is, but, you know, by 92, 96, it's not. I remember Newt Gingrich predicting that Bob Dole was going to carry California because of affirmative action. I think he lost it by about 1 million votes. Anyway, but yes, I think there might be a lot of pressure to pick a woman, or he might decide to stay with Lieberman, you know, on the grounds that it's a kind of like Gore, a centrist.
Right.
If his argument is, I'm a sensible, experienced, trusted leader.
Right.
I'm not going to rock any boats. So you could go, you can see the how different the choices would be. But yeah, I think any one of them, or probably somebody we haven't thought of at this moment.
But it feels like those three would have been probably some of the more prominent names we would have heard then.
At the top of the list, yeah. Yeah.
Now, let me go down path two here on this scenario. So Al Gore is now an incumbent president.
Right.
Does George W. Bush run?
The Bush argument, what I am convinced about is if Gore becomes president, it's very hard for Bush to run on the central argument he did, in fact, run. I will restore honesty and integrity to the White House. Mm-hmm. That was the end of every stump speech. It would be very hard, I think, for a Bush to point to the 1996 fundraising scandals and say, well, you see it, because that's a little different from what Bill Clinton was doing in the White House that got him out.
Well, and don't forget, at this point, First Lady Tipper Gore is probably a pretty prominent face right now. For different reasons. Remember, she's the one most upset about this. And so in many ways, she may be the voice of sort of the scorned woman.
Yeah, the whole issue about the lyrics of pop music and I think stuff like that. So yes. So then if you ask, okay, so it's 2000, who do you run against? Who do you want or who will you take as the Republican nominee? You could make an argument then under those circumstances, their best bet would be John McCain.
Let me introduce another name who was a front runner very early in that race until she ended up not making it to the finish line. Elizabeth Dole.
I'm skeptical.
Does her candidacy become stronger because maybe there's no Bush in the field?
You know what? Deponent knoweth not, as they say. I'm agnostic of that because I don't think she was a particularly formidable candidate just in terms of being a candidate. Mm-hmm. But You know, if Gore is in office, you are looking, if you're a Republican, for some kind of clear alternative based on what it would be. You can't really run against Gore on the grounds that he's not a feminist. That probably right. doesn't work. But the other thing that we can't know, and this is why I'm so fascinated by this whole yeah. arena. You're right. I mean, I dwell in this forever. is Gore has 2 years to screw it up. You know, he wasn't, and I don't think it was ever a particularly effective candidate. And you yeah. could imagine after 2 years, the fact that he comes in replacing a disgraced ex-president doesn't guarantee him 2 years of smooth sailing. I mean, look at Jerry Ford, came in on a very high note, mm-hmm. and by 76, he's a cartoon figure on Saturday Night Live. So it's very hard to know what happens. And I assume at some point you're getting to what I think is the most critical thing, right. which is what happens with September 11th.
Well, that's exactly right. So we've got Gore. We're assuming he does win because we're going to accept the premise that the economy's strong. And he almost won because of that, as it was against, a formidable nominee and all of that. So we're accepting it. But you're right. We don't know. If Gore would have tried, one would assume that he wanted to do one thing that was his before going on the ballot. And so we have no idea if that one thing would have been successful or not. Right.
True. And if we get to 9/11, I'll show you the one possibility that could have really yeah. backfired. But
I want to get to 9/11 because let me set the stage. So 9/11 happens, but this is no longer a new president when 9/11 happens.
Exactly. So
this is a president with, whose national security team is likely holdover. So this
exactly.
is an extraordinarily experienced.
Exactly.
And so now maybe they take, now here's something we don't know. Maybe they're more Bin Laden obsessed than we realize. Maybe the fact that Bill Clinton tried to missile him in 98 was because that team was, I do want to not assume that 9/11 happened. Right. Okay, so there's a sub. But if it does happen, it sounds like you and I are both in the same place where this becomes more politicized quickly because he'll have owned more of it, I guess.
Okay. In fact, I wrote a now out of, not print, out of the ether ebook on if Gore had beaten Bush. And you
of course you did. I didn't know that. Of course
yes. you did. You can't find it anywhere except in my computer. But, okay. I mean, it did get out there for a brief period. But the point about this is it's like you have somehow secretly tapped in. First, Gore was much more obsessed with Bin Laden, and the whole team would have been, because the Bush people had been out of power for 8 years. They were still thinking in terms of state action, not something right. like Al-Qaeda. In my scenario, they actually get Bin Laden, but it doesn't stop 9/11 because the perpetrators have already been here. I interviewed Richard Clark about this for the book, and he thinks Gore would have done everything to stop it, but couldn't have. And your point, it immediately becomes not a unifying
right.
matter, but a dividing one. You were there for 8 years. How come you didn't stop this?
And now this administration would have overseen 2 Bin Laden bombings of New York City.
Right.
Let's remember that, 1993 and right. that. So it becomes I'm pretty cynical, but I think it gets politicized pretty quick.
Oh, I am convinced. Now, by the way, if you have Lieberman as vice president, you then have a heartbeat from the president, the most
yeah.
committed Democrat for yeah. going after Iraq. And indeed, to jump the gun a little bit, I think what happens is Lieberman does not stay as vice president if Gore doesn't invade Iraq. After 9/11, with a Gore president, Lieberman says, you're blowing it.
By the way, Vice President Bob Graham, who voted against going to Iraq, but who actually wanted to go, people forget the reason he voted against the war resolution is he thought that Syria should have been included. He actually was,
more hawkish than Bush.
Yeah, he was in his own way. He had other issues. And of course, he was much tougher on the Saudis. So, and I think a Vice President Feinstein, though, would have been pretty hawkish too. Like, what's interesting is the three people we rolled out there would have been hawkish in different ways for different parts of the Middle East.
Yeah, and there's another, now, you want to hear a real wrinkle about this one? You asked, what would Gore, as president, have wanted to do? All right, bear with me for like 45 seconds. Mm-hmm. one of the things that was really bothering the business community in 99 and 2000 was airline delays, massive delays. So if Gore had wanted to do something, he might have done what the Bush administration in fact did a little while later, which is open up the military air corridors. If that were to happen, Flight 93 might have taken off on time. The only reason the passengers on Flight 93 knew what was going on was the plane took off 45 minutes late. And when they started making phone calls, they knew what was going on in New York. If the Flight 93 takes off on time and the passengers are kind of, oh, it's a hijacking, that plane might have taken out the Capitol. And indeed, in my scenario, that's what happened. So horrible as 9/11 was, a simple act of trying to make air travel better for passengers could result in the decapitation of the government. Now, that's where you are allowed as an alternate historian to kind of, you know, freelance a little. But what it demonstrates is, to me, the contingent nature of history. You know, if I'm right that the drowning of Elian Gonzalez's mother cost Gore the election, or we haven't even talked about what would force Bill Clinton to resign in the first place.
Right.
There was a period, as you know, when some of the Democrats were getting a little nervous about
it. It was wobbly. We kept a list at the hotline, trust me, and we had two lists of Democrats who called for resignation.
Right.
And it wasn't two. Okay. It was in the teens, you know.
So if the Juanita Broderick interview, which for some reason Ken Starr thought was irrelevant, gets out, you know, or if people start coming to the conclusion, as indeed a federal judge did, that Clinton essentially lied in his testimony, you could see how the ground would have shifted. To go back to the first part.
So, yeah, we have presumed some things that give Gore the presidency and give him that 2000 election. But let me go off on a line here, and let's fast forward now. I'm going to skip 02. In the 02 midterms, because we think we have this scenario here. He doesn't go to Iraq. I think a lot of Republicans say it's a mistake that he's not going to Iraq.
Right.
So then the 2004 election may feature then a guy named George W. Bush this time. Maybe he hadn't run in 2000, but he's running and it becomes more plausible because, hey, who's going to clean up the Middle East? Let's get a Bush. Am I wrong? What do you think? I mean, possible?
To quote Tocqueville, I ain't buying it.
Okay.
The reason is if in fact the entire Republican Party is to argue that we have been weakened in the Middle East, that's an argument for McCain.
McCain 04 becomes the hawkish Republican, and it's a national security. What you're saying is the Republican Party goes all national security, and McCain's the hawk.
Yeah, because a governor of Texas, you know, is not on the same footing as a guy whose entire argument is muscular foreign policy, you know, feckless foreign policy for Gore. And we also should remember that there was a kind of a starting in 2001, I think, you had a rough go with the economy for a while. You had a telecom crash.
That's right. We had the Enron issue and all of that stuff that was causing economic chaos, particularly out west.
And I also think you would have had Gore pushing
on climate,
pretty hard on the environmental issue, and that would have had, as we have seen, a potential for backlash among traditional working class Democratic voters, depending on how hard and how militant Gore went on things like. No more internal combustion engine, coal kills. That's part of the contingency thing.
Right. Maybe as painful as that would have been then on environmental issues, we'd be doing more today because we got through that pain, that political pain back then. Maybe. I'm being a little optimistic.
Well, the nice thing about alternate history is, whenever people argue with me and say, that's not what happened, I said, fine, write your own alternate history. This isn't, the only thing that I am passionate about is do your research.
Right.
Don't make assumptions like, well, what if Hitler had a laser beam? Fine, okay.
There was no laser beams. Right.
Yeah.
Although if you Although if you watch High Castle, I don't know if you watched Man in
High Castle. I do. Yes, indeed.
I do think they, and that was my problem with how that show ended. It does end with laser beams.
It kind of goes off the rails.
Went off the rails, right. It's a brilliant first year.
Yeah, I don't know if you loved it.
They thought of all the good stuff, you know. I thought they handled the first year really well, and then then it became laser beams.
There's a historian who's written a wonderful alternate history that there's a separate peace with Britain. Hitler gets stopped in Russia. Stalin sends his armies all the way west to the English Channel, picking up German nuclear scientists on the way. And by the end of his scenario, it's Russia that has the atom bomb, and we don't, because we never got involved in the war. Those are the kinds of alternate histories that I enjoy, because they stem from a deep reading of real history.
You know? Let me ask you this. Let's end. We got about 3 minutes, and I'm going to throw out different names. So if Bill Clinton resigns and Al Gore's president, Hillary Clinton does what?
Possibly divorces Bill. Goes wherever, you know, she maybe becomes a brilliant public interest lawyer.
Runs for the Senate from Illinois instead of New York.
There is that book, The Alternate History that Curtis Sittenfeld wrote, where that's exactly what happens.
Yeah.
She leaves, you know, Bill and Hillary never get together, and she winds up running against him for president.
Well, believe it or not, you brought up a person that we plan on having. We're going to do that alternative history on her, because I have another scenario in her, and I'll leave you with this, which is, I think the only year Hillary Clinton could have won the presidency was one of the years she didn't run, and that was 2004. That of the three times, 8, 16, and 4, that her politics matched the country best, actually, in 4.
It's a good theory. I remember watching her at an event in Madison, Wisconsin, before a huge hall of enthusiastic supporters. This is before she ran for president. Firstly, it was a women's celebration. I don't know why I thought this, Chuck. I said to the person next to me, I don't think she's ever going to be president. This person reminded me of it in 2016. I don't know why. I'd be very hard for me to articulate it. In many ways, she was supremely qualified to be president, you know, by experience. So I don't know. But once again, you have every right. You have the complete freedom to say 2004. Yeah. She would have beaten Bush in running for a second term.
She would have been the strongest candidate to beat Bush. She was hawkish. She would have been the safe. You're in war. The quote, you don't change horses in midstream unless you're changing horses to somebody who knows how to ride the horse. Right. And the perception would have been, oh, she knows how to ride the horse.
Yeah.
That's a theory of the case.
Okay. Now, look,
you still have a Howard Dean issue in those primaries. You still have an anti-Iraq streak that I think would begin to show up. But, you know, for all the reasons Kerry ended up the nominee, because they needed somebody with maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it doesn't work out. But it is sort of remarkable that we didn't have a major woman candidate that year, as it is, by the way, in that front. And then let me throw one more out, and then we got to go, which is, does Barack Obama launch? How tied to Bush's failures in Iraq is the rise of Barack Obama, right? I've always thought about it. Do you get Obama without Bush and Iraq? And if you don't think you do, then is Barack Obama probably still a senator or a senator from Illinois?
Yeah, I think it's critical to remember that the one argument he had, which is a little bit disingenuous because nobody asked a state senator from Illinois to vote on Iraq.
Sure,
is I'm the only candidate in this field, serious candidate, who opposed the war in Iraq. And by 2008, in the Democratic Party base, that was a critical distinction.
Except if we hadn't gone into Iraq.
Right. Well, that's...
right. Like, then all of a sudden, is he that interesting, right?
That's right. I think he's a senator, and maybe he runs for president, given his age, in, I don't know, 2024.
Right. But I do... I guess I will... I'm going to end this way, and I'm curious if you agree with this. Without Bill Clinton surviving... what he survived, we don't get Donald Trump as president. Agree or disagree?
You have given me, what, 15 seconds to think
about it?
Yes,
and you have, and it's a tight out. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes.
You're an old network guy.
Without, because of what follows. Because without Bill Clinton surviving, you don't have Hillary Clinton as president, who was the ideal candidate for Donald Trump to run against. Mm-hmm. He could not have designed a better candidate to run against, in my view. So, possibly not, you know?
This is the whole fun of this. We have decided, we picked one butterfly to flap his wings, and we just touched on an Obama presidency that may never have happened, a Trump presidency that may never have happened, a Gore presidency that might have happened, a McCain presidency that might have happened, and maybe a Hillary presidency that might have happened.
Yes. And we haven't even talked about what would have happened if Charles Evan Hughes had kept his appointment with Hiram Johnson in 1916 in a hotel room in California.
I think we got to end there.
All right, Jeff,
you are an ideal person for this. I miss you, my friend. We miss you out here.
All right, Ben.
Good to see you.
Take care, Chuck. All right, bye-bye.
Bye. You've been listening to the Chuck Todcast from Meet the Press. Today's episode was produced by Zoya Wazir, Justice Gilpin Green, and Matt Rivera. John Reese is our executive producer, and our theme music composed by Spoke Media. You can catch Meet the Press daily on MSNBC every day at 1 p.m. Eastern. Meet the Press Reports is on demand on Peacock, or the big show's available every Sunday morning on any platform.